Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Command Post.
Hey, good evening and welcome to Fire Engineering Talk Radio, to our show, The Command Post. I'm Chief Rick Lasky, and my co-host, Chief John Salka, is away on a family outing. So we're missing John tonight, but we've got a great, great guy taking his place. We're working on our calendars. I want to throw this out there right away. We're working on our calendars as we speak. So if you're interested in hosting a program, a seminar or whatever, or one of our company officer academies, or for that matter, any of our classes, programs, give us a shout. Shoot us a message on email or via email or even on Facebook or whatever, Twitter. We can tell you how to get a hold of us. Better now than later, because the dates are going quick and we just don't want to miss out on you. If you're looking for any information, any of our classes, we try to mention this each show. I send this out weekly to folks. You can check mypridenownership.com website calendar or our Facebook page, the events section, for more information. So try to get that information out there for you as best we can. We hope you and both of your families are doing well. Remember, family, the first family comes first. And lately, with everything going on in our country with the hurricanes, it's been about family big time. Hey, joining me tonight is a very good friend of mine. Is Lewisville, Texas, the assistant chief of Lewisville, Texas, Chief Perry McGrath from Lewisville, Texas, FD. And that's LEWIS for those of you that spelt the other way. We'll talk about that a little bit. But Assistant Chief Terry McGrath. Terry and I have been friends for a long time. We've worked together for a long time. And he's my co-host, partner, and crime, if you will, on our Hump Day Hangout program on the third Wednesday of every month on fireengineering.com. Terry's been a fire service a long time. Terry served as a police officer in the city of Lewisville and the city of Dallas. Was one of our bomb and arson investigators for a long time, and worked his way up to assistant chief, working alongside Chief Tim Tittle. You've heard me talk about Tim for a long time, and what a great boss, what a great leader he is. But welcome, Terry.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm honored to get to fill in for a great guy, and those are big shoes to fill on my resume to try to compare to somebody like Chief Salka, but I'm glad to be here. This is always fun.
Oh, no, buddy. I'm telling you, it's, you know, you and I have so much fun, our Hump Day Hangouts, and we'll get to one of those in a second here, but it's just great. When John said he couldn't make it, the first thing both of us said is, you know, let's get all of Terry, see if Terry can jump in there, and I'm so happy that you did. You've got a ton of great information to share. But, hey, before we go any further, Terry, I need to acknowledge we got a sponsor, and we want to acknowledge that for our listeners and for those that listen to this recording later. But we'd like to thank our sponsor, tonight's sponsor, and from I think all the radio shows, to be honest, is the Honeywell DuPont FDIC Scholarship Program. Honeywell and DuPont have been doing a great job. This is an incredible program. We'll talk more about it a little bit later. But you have the opportunity to recommend someone to receive a scholarship to FDIC International 2018. Simply go to the website, and I'll put the W's in there for those of you that need that, www.HoneywellDuPontFDICScholarship.com. So it's HoneywellDuPontFDICScholarship.com, or go to FDIC.com. It's all over there. If you look at my Facebook page, my Twitter feed, you'll see it there as well. So simply go to that website, all right, for more information on how to nominate a deserving responder to attend this coming year's conference in April. This is all travel, all lodging. They even do a per diem thing and your conference pass for hot and regular. It's over $5,000 worth of stuff. And to be honest, Terry, this is what's amazing to me. And is the fact that you've got this scholarship program, the folks at Honeywell DuPont put out every year now, and it's a bunch of them, because it is expensive to go to FDIC. They're going to pay your airfare, your hotel, give you meal money, and your passes for hot training and in general over $5,000. And we had to put it out there last week because we weren't getting as many entries. And I just can't figure it out. Why would you not jump at something like this if you're a firefighter out there?
That's a valid question, and I think that it may be getting the word out, or maybe that feeling that I'm going to enter into a contest, I'm not going to win it, but certainly you're certainly not going to win if you don't enter. But the fact that you just pointed out that I think it's fairly common that someone gives away, basically your entry into something, and then you've got to figure out how to get there. This is absolutely a full meal deal from bumper to bumper, and I would have a feeling that if you've never been to this and you put in for something like this, you will win twice, because the opportunity to go on someone else's expense, but then the opportunity just to participate and to experience FDIC. So I think maybe that's the way you market it. You're going to win twice on this deal.
Great way to put it, buddy. Great. I thought that'd be, everybody's like, well, I'll never stand a chance. There's going to be thousands and thousands of people put in for it. But like you say, I mean, here it is. If you want to attend the greatest conference on the face of the earth, especially if your department doesn't have the money, here's your chance to take advantage of something that's pretty great. So, how's family doing? I got to ask you that. How's the family doing? Everybody's back to school, right?
Yep. My kids have made it into high school and successfully navigated, Morgan a couple of years, and Tyler, or Morgan is in her junior year and Tyler's in his sophomore year. So they're doing well. They both participated in ROTC. Tyler's still in it, and I'm pretty excited about that. He enjoys it, and he's having a good time with it, and it's been a great experience so far.
Which ROTC is it, Tara?
It's an Air Force branch.
Air Force, okay, cool. I was curious. We got obviously the Air Force base here, so I've had a chance to visit with a lot of different folks from the airmen and women from the Air Force. It's pretty incredible. That'd be awesome. It's just great that he's doing that, because I think the ROTC is so huge when it comes to helping young men and women develop in high school. I think it's great.
Sure,
so,
it's been good for him.
But now, hey, what's going on? Before we get to our couple topics tonight, though, I want to ask you a couple questions. But what's new and what's shaking in Louisville? Last time, I know we talked on a Hump Day Hangout about we see you're doing some hiring. I think you're getting ready to order or have ordered another truck or some stations and things like that. But it sounds like there's a lot going on, bud.
Well, it maybe is one of those instances where it's easier to talk about what's not going on. We will break ground next month on two stations. One's a relocation. One's a new station. We are ordering another mid-mount platform that went online a couple of weeks ago. So that'll be delivered probably in January. Ordering a medic right now, and we will this year hire 18 people for that ladder truck. And it's a lot going on, and I tell you, I'm on year 30 of working in public safety, either in law enforcement or fire. And of course I laugh. I tell people the most stressful job I ever had in my life was when I was 16 years old and I cooked at Chili's. I'm about as stressed as I've ever been right now. I've got, there's so much work to do. It's overwhelming at times, but we've got a great team in place. We've got tremendous support at City Hall. The economy's good, which is obviously what's driving all this and making this happen for us. But it's always been a great place to work, and it will continue to be a great place to work. And we've got a lot of opportunity coming down the pipe.
Well, and how important is that? Terry, you and I both visit a lot of people on our Hump Day Hangout show, and just not just that, but all the time. But to have the support at City Hall like you do, I was honored for almost 12 years there to have great bosses. I would have loved to work for Donna Barron as a city manager. Claude was Claude King was the city manager, as you know, and then Donna moved up as Claude retired. But there's great things. I see it on Twitter. I see it on Facebook. We see it. We drive through there. There's some great things going on. And I mean, there's so many people that don't have that luxury, buddy, of working for good bosses like that.
Yeah, and we are extremely fortunate. I know that, and you see it a lot more than I do. But I've talked to those people that work in a location that there's contentious, you know, relationships, and it can be from fire administration to the labor groups, or between, you know, the department heads and city hall, or department head to department head. And Lewisville has always been a kind of a unique place, I believe, because you know, system wide. We all are truly committed to the overall mission, which is making Lewisville a good place, and it sure makes things a lot easier. And as far as the support, you know, from human resources up to the city manager, all of our city managers, they are very, very pro public safety. Our council, our mayor. I mean, we are truly, truly fortunate. And I think sometimes we lose track of that. I think sometimes maybe our personnel don't understand how fortunate you can be because you've never experienced when things are chaotic or just contentious all the time. And so, you know, that is something that's one of those that you really kind of have to stop and count your blessings sometimes to realize how good you got it.
Well, exactly. And there's so many that would just die to have it and don't. And you and I used to talk about it, you know, when we were working there together, and with Tim as well, that once in a while you almost wish you could do an exchange program where you could send someone out to go work somewhere else and then have them come back and go, look, you know what, we're nobody special. We're not, you know, all that, you know, wonderful and great. We're trying to do the best job we can, but, you know, go work somewhere else where, you know, there's violent and tough times and you know, just misery all the time, and I think you'd come back running knowing you had a good thing here. So, but well, exciting. Now at Station 3 you're moving. Talked about that. Station
right.
3 you're moving locations, right?
Right.
New headquarters on the horizon. New
we're,
Station
yep,
8.
Yep, we're talking about right? it, yeah.
Okay, so all planning.
Station 8, yeah. So,
like that.
So, yeah, we've got tremendous amount of growth out east, which gets out towards Chief Thompson's area in the colony, and on the other side of the colony you have Frisco. So for those who don't know the reference in this metroplex, it's where the Dallas Cowboys just moved their practice headquarters over to Frisco. So Toyota just relocated their national headquarters to Plano, which is right across the street from that. So it's a very hot corridor up here, and so we're about, you know, I don't know, as the crow flies, probably 5 miles to our borders removed from that. So as you can imagine, that entire area is absolutely just, it's explosive growth. It's crazy. So that's where our Station 8 is going, is to serve that growth out there. And we are getting it in the nick of time. We're building this one in a housing addition. And so ours will be going up as the houses are going up, which is, again, you know, I get back to the foresight of, and, you know, this started back when you were here, Chief. It's been a tremendous amount of looking ahead and putting some vision down to say, where do we need to be, and actually pulling the trigger and getting there ahead of when you absolutely need to be there. So again, we're, you know, it's all coming together.
Well, the biggest thing is grabbing the right piece of property and knowing what you're going to have out there, right? I mean, there's, you know, the county, whether Chief Thompson, great leader, great boss, great fire department. You got Carrollton right there, another great fire department. But, you know, it's nice to depend on automatic aid. It's another thing when you have busy fire departments around you where that second new engine may not be second new-ish in the way of closeness, and you're waiting a little bit. So, you know, to have that out there, sixes, I know, you know, nothing but fields, but it was like, let's look at the streets and let's see what's coming here next. At least negotiate, get the property, so we're sitting on that, and then when the time comes, you know, make it all happen. So, well, great, great, exciting. Like I said, every time if you're driving on 121 and if you blink, you're going to miss something, because by the time you turn around, come back, they would have built something. So, you know,
yeah.
And growth is good. Growth is good. So, hey, I know we've been sending our thoughts and prayers, Terry, to those in Florida. And down along the coast in Texas, the affected areas by the hurricanes. We've been doing this a long time, you and I, and we know the whole emergency management side of things and planning and that. But oh my God, I mean, when you look at okay, you got Hurricane Harvey that came in and just sat there and just dumped water and didn't do anything, and then you've got a hurricane hit Florida that as it's approaching, it's like three times the size of the state of Florida. You're looking at it and go, God, how do you prepare for that? Now, if we can kind of back off of that one for a second, again, we're sending our thoughts and prayers to those in Florida. We've got some great people out there, and they're doing some great things, specifically here in Texas, because I know you hit Louisville is very much involved as well as everybody else. First of all, describe for our listeners the area affected, Terry. I mean, this is, you know, we know from one end, from the bottom on up, the state of Florida, they got hammered. Talk about the area and, you know, everything down there along the coast. How big an area just is that?
Yeah, so, you know, I think Dallas gets a lot of the airplay. Houston actually is the largest city in the state, and it is, I believe, the fourth largest city in the United States. So Houston proper, and I just kind of throwing rough numbers at you, but Houston proper is like 630 square miles with a population of 2.3 million people. That's in the city of Houston. What's more impressive than that is the metropolitan area surrounding Houston. And the metropolitan area is I think population's about 7 million people, and the metropolitan area I think in that 7 million people is you're looking at about 1,600 square miles, so it's a very densely populated area. It's got and of course probably the one thing that everyone can relate to is there's a tremendous amount of petroleum refinery operations that go on in that area between, typically between Houston and if you go towards the east where you go through Beaumont and Baytown and those areas, and there's a lot of refineries in that area, and so there's a tremendous amount of real critical infrastructure that's at play in this particular situation. So it's a large area, and this particular storm. Everyone focused on Corpus. That's where this thing was going to come to shore. The eye was going to hit. But if you go from Corpus, just from Corpus to the state line of Louisiana, it's about 300 miles long. And, they're estimating right now that, 50 inches of rainfall in this area or in excess of 50 inches. They're saying that there were 28,000 square miles underwater. So it was a significant storm. I think what is more impressive is the square mileage, because I was talking to a fellow the other day, a guy that works for Houston Fire, and you know, he said that their guys would get in a boat and go like, you know, driving down a freeway or something in a boat. And they would run into a fire crew in a boat that came from 20 miles away from the other direction. And, you know, they weren't even Houston guys. They were from another city. So, now that's not unheard of in the metropolitan area of Houston, but a little different when you can pull up and see a rig or you know, you actually can see what street you're on or you have an idea of where you are. But so it was impressive. In a lot of different respects, but certainly the square miles involved that were impacted by flood waters was just absolutely enormous. And it was Houston obviously gets the top billing for this, but you know, every single community between, you know, if you go just a little bit west or south of Corpus and then follow that all the way around to Louisiana. I know that Rockport, which is where our crews, they're still there today. That town
Rockport was obliterated, right?
Right, yeah. But on the other side, so go to the other side of Houston. Rockport's down, I think, around Corpus. So go to the other side on the Louisiana side. Is you've got Orange, and you've got Port Arthur, I think, is up there. And so you've got completely on the other side, so go 300 miles away, and they've got, you know, squadrons of helicopters running from one end of that 300-mile range to the other to try to rescue people, because as soon as this leveled off, so to speak, pardon the pun, then, the you know, that thing shifted and sat over, you know, another area of Texas, and they basically, you know, Chief, you rinsed and repeat. They go down there and did these heroic things in, let's say, the eastern or western side of Houston, and then 18 hours later, they were doing the same thing, you know, 100 miles up the coast, because this thing literally, like, came on land, went back out and recharged, came back on land, and just sat there. So it was impressive.
Well, and again, you know, all the years, you know, we've been living here since 2000, and most of that's been following Emily, our you know, my daughter, playing softball. And you know, you're down there all the time, all around Houston, playing ball, plus all the teaching, all our friends down there, you know, friends in the fire service, you know, the people we know. You know, like I said, my heart's breaking right now for what I'm, you know, what's going on in Florida. You know, because, oh my God, we'll talk about that in a second. But just to see the neighborhoods, Terry, you know, it's like, I remember driving down there. It's like, you know, this is like, here's strip malls and houses and buildings and stuff. They're just, you know, and I don't care what people say when they say, you know, well, it's not our first rodeo. We've been through hurricanes before. You know, this wrecked everybody's stuff. I mean, there's no, well, I'm just going to wash this stuff off. So much of it was contaminated, Terry. You know, you see some of these people who lost everything. And some people went on flood insurance. And, you know, you're just, I mean, it's so huge. But now I will say this, from everything sitting in the peanut gallery, from our administration dropping the declaration as fast as they did, to FEMA getting out there, to the local agencies, to the statewide agencies, the Cajun Navy. By the way, before I forget, do you want to share that story? Are you with our listeners? Would you be willing to share that story about the Cajun Navy?
Yeah, Austin's story?
Yeah. Would you be willing to do that?
Oh, yeah. So one of our firefighters and just a salt of the earth guy, just, you know, great guy, all around guy. And would, you know, I heard someone give an analogy the other day about somebody being the type of guy that would not only give you the shirt off his back, but, you know, he'd walk 10 miles to give it to you. And so that's Austin. And, you know, Austin, during the height of all of this, and this was after Houston, Rockport, our crews were already deployed. We had a division chief in Houston running EMS operations for the state down there. And so anyway, he called me and you know, started off with the, man, I really hate to bother you, chief. I know you're busy. And he said, you know, do you have anybody in the Orange, you know, anywhere around Orange? You know, I haven't heard from my dad since the storm hit. And he goes, you know, I know he's okay, but I can't get a hold of him, and I just like to talk to him. And so we're probably talking day three of this. Well, it just so happened this is one of those times when this thing, like you know, came back out to the coast, sucked up some more moisture or whatever, and then came back on. And this time when it came back through, it went through Port Arthur, Beaumont, and Orange. So I said, you know, Austin, give me as much information as you can, and I will pass it on to our people down there, and you know, we'll see what we can do. Surely we can send someone by to knock on a door or lay eyes on the house or something. But so I got a hold of Chief Reeves, and he said, hey, I'm telling you right now, that is ground zero. He said, we can't get trucks in there. The only thing that's getting in there are the military trucks that can get in the high water. And he said, we're trying to get a bunch of helicopters. And he goes, I got two nursing homes out that way right now. We got 270 patients. We're trying to get them moved. And, you know, so I'm sitting here thinking to myself, all right, I gotta call Austin back and tell him that, you know, hey, we're going to try. And FYI, things don't look good in Orange right now. So I called him back. We chatted for a few minutes. And, you know, I just told him, I said, keep me posted if you find out anything out. I'll keep rattling the bushes on my side. We'll see what we can do for you. So about an hour later, he called me and he said, hey, I got online and I got a hold of this Cajun Navy group via Facebook. And within, you know, I think it was within 2 hours, Chief, he had gotten confirmation from Cajun Navy that they had boats in that area and they were sending someone by his house. Within 3 hours, his dad was calling him from one of the Cajun Navy guys' phones. They went there. He was in a, I think, a two-story house. He was on the second floor. He was safe, but obviously the house was destroyed. He didn't have a phone. But anyway, he called Austin, said, "I'm fine." And then this Cajun Navy group ended up, transporting him out of there. It worked exactly like anyone would hope something like this would work. And while we're on the topic of the Cajun Navy, because I kind of feel this way too, sometimes I think we get very protective of what we do, and we're first responders, we're prideful people, we train and we have certification and we have, all the equipment and the whatever. Hey, this is way beyond all that. And so I always have admiration for people who can put their pride aside and actually ask for help or accept help or graciously, willingly accept help. My hat's off to the Houston mayor and the elected officials down there that said, hey, if you have a boat, we need your help. Because truly, those organizations, in my opinion, made a huge difference in this instance.
Well, I was glad you shared that story. I thought, what an incredible way to just – there's so many things to talk about when it comes to just that. You know, how many people helped out, how many people did things. But here was another way just to make sure somebody got on the phone and said, hey, I'm okay, to reach out. And I agree. You know, sometimes we get kind of – we read our own newspaper clippings and don't realize there's some pretty incredible people out there. And, oh, my God, the way everybody came together – was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. You got a governor that did a great job. I love Governor Abbott. And just, from the National Guard to the regular forces to the Coast Guard to the Navy to everybody that was down there doing what they were doing, it just absolutely amazing. Just absolutely amazing how folks came together to take care of things. Now, how you guys were headed, your task force, your folks were heading down there pretty early, though, right?
Yeah, so we mobilized Thursday. We sent a medic out, Chief Reeves, who's a kind of a muckety-muck higher up with the Texas EMS group. So they mobilized him early. He goes down there as a command-level person. So he was mobilized early, and we sent an EMS strike team on Thursday prior to the storm hitting. So obviously the idea was that they were going to try to get hospitals. They had to relocate hospitals. So they began flying all the neonate stuff out and bringing it up here to the Metroplex. So we sent an ambulance out Thursday with two guys. We sent one of our EMS captains, went as a strike team leader for the EMS. So I think they went with six ambulances in that particular strike team, and that was just from, I think it was Coppell, Little Elm, just all the cities that are contiguous to us. So they went down there Thursday and started, they're getting a lot of the nursing home patients, the non-ambulatory people. They also mobilized all the ambuses, which are those multi-patient, big buses that Flowermount has one. And yeah, so they mobilized all those down there. So they did a great job. And again, and these are my opinions. I caution, people because I wasn't on the front lines. I was just a person on the back making a lot of phone calls and trying to help and get resources where they needed to be. But in my opinion, I think they did a phenomenal job of getting a ton of resources down there. And they get, to give you an idea, when I say it's a 300-mile range, they were staging in San Antonio, 200 miles from Houston. So even though they did a great job of mobilizing and getting them down there, if you just, consider – where you're trying to stage people out of harm's way, this chief and most people do in this business that, it's not like you're going to take those seven ambulances that we sent down there and tell them go from San Antonio to Corpus and get in there and make some, make a difference because you got a 3-hour drive ahead of you, under the best of circumstances. So, but anyway, they mobilized a lot of resources on the medical side, pre-landfall. And I think it made a huge difference.
Well, unfortunately, we've got the advantage to be able to stage back away, you know, out of harm's way, you know what I'm saying, like you said, and then be able to push in. I'm sitting there thinking, well, you're explaining that, going, how do you do that in Florida? Our friends in Florida take care of things. When you got something that's going to cover the whole state, you know, it's not like, hey, we're going to stage in, Sarasota, and we'll shoot down. It's like the whole state,
right?
You know, for the most, Jackson.
Yeah.
I mean, oh my God, just absolutely, absolutely, just amazing the size of these two things. But I will say this: if there's a ray of sunshine in all of this, it's. I know I'm partial, but it's watching the first responders come together like they did. From everywhere, everybody. I've got a good friend of mine, Terry. You've heard me talk about Jeff Bryant. Jeff is the chief in Amboy, Illinois. John and I have been there so many times, they made us honorary fire chiefs to teach for him. Jeff's, all volunteer department. Most of them, they're next to, Dixon, which is a great fire department, great chief there, their career. But he put together, he's got a trailer they're bringing down there. I hooked him up with Jason from Pearland, who one of the chiefs, who got him hooked up with somebody in the Beaumont area that took a shellac. And now Jeff, one of his volunteers, and Jeff are the owners of Dingus Fire Company, formerly known as Illinois Fire Store. They changed the name to Dingus, D-I-N-G-E-S, Fire. They sell everything fire-related. And they're going down there with $50,000 worth of stuff in a trailer. Thermal imagers are going down there with turnout gear, with everything for water and hygiene stuff to everything that, and we got them hooked up with a particular fire department down there that needs it. And that's just a smidgen, as great as that is, and Jeff's a wonderful guy. You think about all the help and people stepping up. How about J.J. Watt from the Houston Texans? Started out with a desire, Terry, to raise $500,000, and he's like millions and millions and millions into this fundraiser now.
$30 million, I thought, was the last. Talk about exceeding your goals, yeah.
Oh my God! Oh, just
absolutely
incredible.
Just, I want to touch on something else because we started this out talking about great bosses, and I'll say this: if people listen to this, this discussion, I can't emphasize enough how important it is. If you're a fire chief, empower your people to solve problems, and get out of the way and let them solve problems, and so. Let me just tell you another thing that happened that I was very, very proud of the city of Louisville and very, very proud of the city of Sanger. So one of our battalion chiefs is actually the chief of Sanger Fire Department, which is north of Louisville. It's a combination department, rural. But anyway, when we were assembling resources, they called and asked for, they wanted a type one from us. And I just, due to mechanical problems, I didn't have a type one to send. But Sanger had a type one, but they didn't have the people. So, and without exaggeration, inside of 3 minutes, I talked to Chief McNeil. He mentioned to me, he said, well, David's got an engine, but doesn't have people. We got people, don't have an engine. And I said, well, let's put our people on his engine. And he said, yeah, I think that'll work. And I hung the phone up, called David. I said, David, I got people for your engine. And he said, all right, do you want me to bring it down to you now? You want it? Anyway, within 3 minutes, that problem was solved. And I bring that point up because we work for a phenomenal organization that I didn't have to hang up and call Chief Tittle and say, hey, this is what we're going to do. Chief Tittle trusts myself and Chief McNeil to make good decisions. And I can't speak to how valuable that is, especially in something like this, because right now they need resources. And the last thing we need to do as an organization – so I don't know. Let's call city attorney and see if we can put our now. Is that is that passed all the necessary inspections, and if they can send a copy of their form 92? It didn't matter. And that engine today, Chief, is still down in Rockport with our people on it. That's a small story, but I think it really speaks to how things operate. Operate here in Texas and certainly in our area.
Well, and I was going to say, you nailed it, Terry, with saying let your people do their jobs. Let your people do their jobs. Listen to them. They've got incredible, they got incredible ideas if you just listen. You know, some of them aren't doable sometimes, but a lot of them are. You know, I remember the first time we rolled our first task force out, going up to Nakona and St. Joe with all the wildland. I remember Claude King, our city manager, had told us, remember he told us early on, we need to be helping people. I don't ever want to see people sitting on the roofs of houses like you saw in New Orleans, and we've got 56 drivers, fire boats, and we can't go because of red tape. He goes, we need to be involved. We need to help people. And that's a city manager that was coming from. And I remember calling him as we're passing UNT tear with the whole column of equipment and go, oh, by the way, we're on our way to Nakona. And he says, all right,
yeah.
Good. And any other time, I would have been scared to death to call my boss and say, all right, we're going. I didn't ask for your permission. But you're right. That's how it works there. And that's how it works. I mean, there's, you know, that's the same thing. There's, you know, whether it's Flower Mound or Lake Cities or Coppell, you know, the good boss is there. And I'm glad you brought that up. What a great point. If you're a chief, let your people do their jobs. Get your bosses, you know, on board. I know some people work with some knuckleheads. I know that. But, I mean, what a great example of coming together and doing things right and thinking. I really hate using it for, you know, thinking out of the box, but that's what it takes. It takes somebody who can sit there and come up with ideas, you know, come up with a way to make things happen, especially when, you know, as much as you want to have a playbook for something like a hurricane response, there's always stuff that comes up that's not in the playbook, and you've got to be innovative if you're going to be a good boss. So, hey, folks, We're visiting tonight with Assistant Chief Terry McGrath. Terry's with the Lewisville, Texas Fire Department. Good friend of mine, good buddy. We've worked together for a long time, and Terry's my co-host and partner on our Hump Day Hangout shows that you watch and you listen to here on FireEngineering.com. And we've been visiting a little bit about what went on down in Texas and sending our thoughts and prayers to them, as well as our folks in Florida that are going through a really bad time. Terry, next week on the 20th, you know, I've got a conflict. I'm going to be giving a keynote at a hazmat conference in Massachusetts. So, but you're going to have on the show, on our show, you want to explain who you're going to have? I know you called it, you were looking at calling it Harvey and Houston, to bring that information to the viewing public, if you will, to those of the fire service. You've got some pretty good guests lined up for the show, don't you?
Yeah, so due to a prior relationship, Matt White, who works for Houston Fire, and I think the last time he was a captain, the last time I talked to him, I think he was due to be promoted. So he's something more than that now. I don't know. I think if he went to a division chief or I'm not sure how Houston's structured. But anyway, I actually sent Matt a message like during the heat of the storm, you know, and I apologized at the beginning, and I said, hey, man, I know this is really bad timing, but we got a Hump Day Hangout coming up this month, and I would love to talk about what's going on there right now. He emailed me back within probably 8 hours and said, hey, I'm all on board, and he said, if you can give me a few days, I will line you up some guests. So he came through in a huge way. We've got scheduled, and I hope that they can still make it. Right now scheduled, we've got Assistant Chief Richard Mann from Houston. I've got District Chief Mark Donovan, also from Houston. He operated in forward operations area command, doing search and record search and rescue. Chief Mann was in the main emergency operations center. So, and then in addition to them, I've got Dr. Kevin Schultz. He is a physician, medical director, Houston Police SWAT tactical medical director. He was heavily involved in their initial shelter, which saw, I think, in excess of 10,000 people the first day. And then we've got a heavy rescue equipment operator that's also going to join us, Bo Moreno. And he was doing, you know, helicopter long line rescues and, you know, all kinds of stuff. And then of course Matt was involved in this as well. So anyway, it's a great panel. It's an hour long, which I fear will fly by as they often always do. But I'm really excited about this. I think they're going to have a lot of really fascinating insight into, you know, how this thing all played out in the first 24 hours. And so pretty excited about that.
know, an all-star lineup from a great fire department. Houston's got a great reputation. You and I both know so many people down there, you know, from over the years and from that, from KTA, from the, you know, Keeping Tradition Alive, the Pipes, Drums, and Agar Symposium, to just responses, to just, you know, functions and things throughout the state, classes, conferences, and what a great contact. You have, like I said, that's an all-star lineup. I'm so disappointed I'm not going to make it, but I'm going to watch it for sure. For our viewers, our listeners, our viewers for our Hump Day Hangouts, our listeners of this show, again, that's next week. That's Wednesday the 20th at noon Central for an hour. So tune in. If not, pull it up. You'll be able to watch it, you know, afterwards. It's always archived right there, just like all these shows are. But another great way, Terry, just, you know, it's just through contacts. Like I said, I was able to get Chief Jeff Bryan from Amboy hooked up with Jason down in Pearland, who was able to hook him up with somebody on the east side of, or north side, if you will, we want to call it, you know, that Beaumont area, to get that trailer full of stuff that, oh my God, is going to help a fire department down there. There's just, like I said, so many great people, so many great folks out there. I'm just amazed. And the first responders, I mean, Terry, think about that. You know, one of the many areas that you oversee in your, with your divisions, is protective clothing. And there's fire departments that, you know, went out and their gear's all wrecked here because, you know, what was in the water, the contaminants, a lot of the petroleum stuff has just ruined their gear. And you're talking whole fire departments with, you know, turnout gear that was just ruined. Among other things, it's just amazing.
Yeah, and it's you know, obviously we throw the word Houston around, and not to diminish anyone's level of pain and suffering through this, but you know, in my eyes, I think and believe that the larger cities, it's a little bit easier for them to recover. They tend to have the resources and the means to go out and make things like that happen. Whereas when you get into smaller communities, you know, like a Rockport or even, you know, drop down into the small, all the volunteer departments and that, you know, if they lost fire equipment, they lost their fire station. And, you know, Houston lost some facilities in this, but, you know, they have, I don't know, 105 fire stations or something. So, you know, when you're dealing with a small community and that's all, you know, the only thing they have is the firehouse and two or three old trucks in there. And then all their equipment for those trucks is in there, and the whole thing's gone. You know, I mean, it's almost overwhelming when you stop and think about it.
Oh, it absolutely is. And the Dingus Fire Company with Jeff Bryant coordinating this, you know, the donations, I mean, you look at the donations, this has been happening all over. It came from Amboy, the Bolingbrook Fire Department, Aliso Fire Department, Metamora Fire Department, Illinois Fire Service Institute, BorgWarner. I mean, it just goes on. The list goes on and on. And they're bringing it, like you said, Terry, they're bringing it to a department with three stations. They have three firehouses that got whacked. I mean, like you said, and I'm glad you brought up, I was going to ask you to bring up Rockport, because it was pretty much obliterated, like we said, and people kind of, a lot of folks forgot about that. We focused on, you know, like you said, you hear, it's like when you say, where do you live? Oh, I live, you know, where are you from? I'm in Dallas. Well, you're not necessarily in the city of Dallas. You're in the Dallas area. Same thing down there, you know, Houston, and we forget that there's all these communities. I mean, community after community after community that were affected by this. I love the fact that people are stepping up to help them, as they are the folks in Florida, with making things happen. So, again, check out next week's Hump Day Hangout if you can at noon Central, and listen to how to make things happen when you're planning for something like that, and how to do a good job at taking care of people. So, Terry, one thing I wanted to, you know, to talk with you about tonight, if we kind of switch gears now, is we talked once before, Hump Day Hangout, with Chief Mark Richards, one of your division chiefs, yourself, and we talked about the hiring processes and hiring people. You mentioned earlier, you know, putting a truck company in service and hiring the guys for that. I know it's still the Metroplex of Dallas, the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, or as my buddies in Fort Worth say, the Fort Worth-Dallas Metroplex. I've never seen pretty much anywhere in the country, Terry, that there are a section or an area that has as many jobs available right now to the point where there's, you know, I don't want to say there's not enough qualified applicants, but everybody's competing. I don't know. I mean, it's amazing. Everybody, you know, I know when I was in Trophy Club, just trying to hire one or two firefighters from Monday to that Friday, from notification to test day, we lost 16 people that got hired by other fire departments. You've got to see the difficulty trying to recruit as big a group as you're trying to get. And you're always hiring in Louisville, but with putting, you know, hired 18 guys to put a ladder company in service is no easy undertaking. You've got to see the difficulties with this.
Yeah, that's a pain point with every agency out here. And so, you know, I think we had heard some of the area chiefs at a meeting. They had kind of got together and put pencil to paper. And you know, I've heard the figure that in this Metroplex area, Dallas-Fort Worth area, somewhere, and this is not including the big cities. We don't ever include Dallas-Fort Worth and usually Arlington in that because they hire and run their own academies. But just in the departments that are trying to hire, let's say, certified firefighters or certainly certified firefighter paramedics preferred, roughly around 250 jobs available within, say, 12 months ago to the next 2 years, so in a three-year time period. You know, Frisco, McKinney, Allen, they're all growing just exponentially. Flower Mound. We're hiring for this truck that's 18, and it's going to be a very difficult task. And so, you know, we have planned as best that we can. We have absolutely whiteboarded this every which way that we can conceivably. Do we hire just firefighters? Do we train in one discipline or the other? Do we just do our own academy? Do we, you know, try to do 9 and 9 and you know, all sorts of combinations. We're moving forward with our plan, and I want to stay optimistic and comfortable and say that we'll get this done, but it's going to be challenging. And we're actually testing next month for two positions, and I'm kind of hoping that gives me a little bit better read for when we do the 18 hire, which will come later in the budget year. We'll probably start that testing process, and we want to wait till May because that at least gives one more cycle of EMT and paramedic school or paramedic and fire academies to graduate. So, but we're doing, you know, we haven't done a lot of recruiting in the past at that level. We've always relied on just hiring from other departments, but we're really spending a bulk of our energy in the fire academies right now, trying to get whatever we can there. But, you know, we're one of probably, you know, 15 agencies that all pay comparable and all have a tremendous amount of opportunity available to them. So is it going to be challenging?
Oh, I'm telling you. And like I said, every time you turn around, there's another department posting that they're hiring and they have positions available. And Terry, when I travel, I tell people, look, if you've got a clean record, if you're a certified firefighter, if you're a certified firefighter paramedic, just pick your department for the most part. But, you know, there's a ton of jobs at the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex if you're, you know, looking to get hired as a firefighter, firefighter EMT, or firefighter paramedic. So now, the police department in Louisville doing something that I really didn't see that much of in the Metroplex. Maybe I missed it police-wise, but they're actually doing lateral hires, are they not?
Yeah, so they went and kind of you know, brainstormed and came up with some alternative ideas, and so our police department started allowing some lateral transfers, and you know, part of that was to take advantage of the fiasco or the issues that were hitting Dallas with the pension problem and the people that were wanting to leave there. So I think they benefited quite a bit from changing the model, you know, and that kind of gets back to things that we touched on tonight, Chief, is, you know, man, you got to stay nimble. And so we've made drastic changes in our hiring process to try to solve our problems. And again, getting back to our bosses, they've been incredibly open to the ideas of what we've tried to do. I think we've been successful in the changes we've made. And by changes, you know, we did away with our written exam. And what we're trying to do is lower the barrier for a guy to come over from another department and not maybe score so well on a written exam. And then, you know, he's got that hanging over him. And my feeling and thoughts all along are is that if you are a certified firefighter, a certified paramedic in the state of Texas, intellectually you can work for the Lewisville Fire Department. And I don't need a written exam to tell me that you know, you can read and write. So, you know, but and people, some people don't agree with it. Some people think it's innovative that we tried this. But, you know, getting back to the police department, what they tried to do was that what they were doing wasn't working. And so, you know, what they had to sit down and figure out something else, and they did. And right now it's solved their problem. And, you know, they'll continue to evaluate it. And but right now they move ahead.
Well, and you know what? Hey, I've already got people asking me. I posted it and asking for contacts there to talk to people that are police officers. So, you know, it's all about being creative nowadays at how you recruit and how you retain your people. And, you know, nowadays you need to be competitive. So I agree. And I think the hiring process you guys helped us out with, like I said, and Trophy Club worked very well. I just see it. It's just a great process. If you're at all interested, folks, we'll give Terry's email at the end of the night, and he can get you hooked up with him or with Chief Richards, and they can explain their process to you. But the whole thing's pretty incredible. Now, one of the things you hit on that I want to kind of move to next is, you know, a couple of things you said, Terry, and that is about having good bosses, about having good chiefs that are willing to trust their people, to listen to their people, bosses that are willing to say, hey, just go get this, do this right, working things out, so on and so forth and all that. What advice do you have? Like I said, I know how long you've been doing this a long time, and we worked together when I was there for the better part of 12 years. But what advice do you give, or what do you recommend to some of the bosses out there, some of the chief officers? Let's just talk about the day chiefs. You make it to days, you're the training chief, you're, you know, whether it's emergency manager or EMS or whatever your duty is, or you're an ops chief or admin chief or whatever. How important and what advice do you give to those on how to accomplish it? With staying in touch with the troops, you know what I'm saying? Because it's so easy to get sewn in behind your desk with all the things you have to do. How important is it to stay in touch with the people, with your guys and gals?
Well, it's incredibly important. Unfortunately, I think it's there's an art to it, and I think there's very few artists in this that have the ability to do it well. And I certainly don't. If I had to rate myself at this, I'd say I'm, you know, maybe in that 50th to 60th percentile. I try to make an effort to be sociable with the guys, to go over, you know, there's occasionally, chief, you know, if I'm standing in the bay, the tones go off and I jump in the engine, they'll kind of look over their shoulder and they're like, oh, you know, like they're in trouble or something. And I'm just like, no, listen, my job is incredibly boring and this is where the fun is. So, but you know, chief, I think, and we hear this a lot, we hear it from the bottom up where they say that you lose touch and you don't know what it, or you don't remember what it's like to ride the rig or the ambulance or, so, you know, I don't necessarily agree with that thought. I guess I understand what they're trying to say. But you know, everything's a matter of perspective. So in the administration, we have a job to do and we've got people we have to answer to. So sometimes that's a difficult line for the troops to hear or to listen to, especially when they hear it over and over again. So there's a lot of that. I think the communication is huge. It always is. You hear it no matter whether you're in corporate America or working for the fire department or Dallas Police Department. The communication is a big thing, and that's an art in and of itself. So, you know, that's important. I think it's a twofold thing. Number one, don't ever relax your standards and hold people accountable. And then after you hold them accountable and you have trust in them, lighten up just a little bit and give them the freedom and let them do what firefighters, this personality of a firefighter, police officer is you are a problem solver. I think we could validate that with psychological exams, and there's a personality trait of people that get into this line of work. So I think the worst thing you can do as a supervisor is to snuff that out, or is to stifle that in somebody and limit their ability to go out and solve problems and do what they inherently want to do, or kind of have that inner drive to do. So, you know, the other thing too is that, and I say this and I preach this a lot, is that I sit at my desk and I can come up with things that I think are great ideas all the time. In my mind, they're great ideas. Maybe on paper, when I'm doing budget stuff, they're great ideas, but they don't always work. And so I think there's always that necessity to get outside and follow up to make sure that the decisions that you're making, the direction that you're taking the department or division or a group in, is actually working. And the only way you're going to figure that out is, first of all, to talk to them, and second of all, to get out there and watch it and ask questions and then, you know, be open enough to go back to your desk and go, man, that sucked. That didn't work. I got to do better. So.
Well, and we just, I know how many problems we killed off by just making the battalion chiefs visit the firehouses, because, you know, they were bogged down with this and all this and so forth. You say, look, you know, if I have to use the word mandatory, you have to make it each one of your firehouses. And, you know, Terry, you've been there where the guys are waiting. They're waiting. They're like, okay, he should be by here about 3 o'clock or noon or 10 o'clock or whatever, you know, and we'll ask him when he comes here. Or they just want to get caught up. A lot of relationships you have with your firefighters that I pick up on is because you stop and you have conversations where you talk about their families and their kids and are taking an interest in their lives, not just on the job kind of stuff, but their family too, which is huge because there's that whole human side of things. But I know we were able to fix a lot of things when we had just the battalion chiefs making rounds and take care of business that way. So, Terry, hang in there 1 second. We got to take a little break here and acknowledge our sponsor again. Folks, we mentioned them at the beginning of the show, the Honeywell DuPont FDIC Scholarship Program. And the folks from Honeywell DuPont are doing something pretty incredible. They've been doing it for a few years now. But they're giving out scholarships to FDIC International. You've got this incredible opportunity to recommend someone to receive a scholarship for FDIC International in Indianapolis in April 2018. All you have to do is go to their website at HoneywellDuPontFDICScholarship.com. That's the website for this. HoneywellDuPontFDICScholarship, altogether.com, or go to FDIC.com. Best way to you pull it up there, or go to my Facebook or Twitter feeds. All right. It's an easy process. I'm telling you, it's an easy process to nominate someone for the conference. They're going to cover your airfare. They're going to, you know, your travel. They're going to cover your hotel for the week. They're going to, I think they do a meal per diem, your hot, you know, admission for hands-on training for the general sessions. It's over $5,000 worth of stuff that they're giving away to a whole bunch of people. Just take some time, think of someone you know is deserving, and take care of them. So I think it's a great opportunity. Hey, we've been visiting with Terry McGrath, Assistant Chief in Lewisville, Texas. And, again, I said this earlier, my Hump Day Hangout partner and co-host, and we do our Hump Day Hangouts on Wednesdays, the third Wednesday every month. Terry, I got to mention something here. I was just in Morinville, Canada, right outside Edmonton, and what an incredible. Brad, the chief there, put on a program. Terry, you talk about good bosses. He's a career chief for a volunteer department. What a great department, first off. But, it's like Snyder, New York. I've always said they're one of those departments. Amboy, Illinois, where Jeff Bryant's at, there's these departments. Some people, you know, they're not the big, gigantic metro departments, but, oh, my God, they've got their stuff together. They've got their stuff together, and it was so much fun going up there, myself and Paul Combs, and Teach and Form Terry. They had this room. I mean, the auditorium was set up. It was incredible how they had it, you know, decorated and done up for the attendees. It's all about the attendees and their comfort. We just booked another one January 20th in Washington State. My good buddy, Terry, you heard me talk about Greg Osborne out there, and Paul Wagner, the chief of Skagit County. But January 20th, I'm going to see Paulie and Greg. Greg's department, Snohomish County Fire District Number 4, is going to be hosting a pride and ownership program January 20th, so we're going to be back in Washington State as well as other places. But so many great people out there doing so many great things. Again, take a look at the list on my Facebook page or Twitter feed of where Dingus Fire from Illinois, all the contributors that you know, were able to contribute to for that trailer full of stuff that's heading down to that department down there. I guess, Terry, what would it be east of Houston? Is that the way to talk about that? Beaumont, northeast, is that how you call it? I mean,
yeah.
That's east. Looking at, yeah, so east.
Yes.
The east side of
yeah.
Houston along the coast. Yeah, where it's, you know, some, like I said, like Terry mentioned it before, so many departments, so many communities, you know, 1, 2, 3 stations that just got waylaid. So they're still going to need our help, as everybody in Florida is going to need our help. Is going to need our help for a while. So, hey Terry, before we, I know we've been doing this for an hour. I hope you can spend a few more minutes with me, because I just want to pick your brains on a couple things. And one is, we just talked about, you know, the new hire, and then we talked about, you know, day chiefs and staying connected with the troops and all that kind of stuff. You and Mark McNeil, your partner, the assistant chief over ops, and then the boss, Tim Tittle, Chief Tittle, what do you look for in that? And let's break this down into two. Let's talk about the company officer first, and hold off with the firefighter. What do you look for in that for that good company officer? Whether you put them on the engine or the truck company, what you know, if you could describe, you know, if you guys are sitting around, you remember you and me and Daryl, you know, Tim used to sit there, and when we would talk about promotions, you know, we'd even fantasize sometimes, go, God, I can't wait till this guy one day moves up, because he's going to be a great captain and this guy's going to be a great boss and so on and so forth. What do you look for? Describe for me that good company officer for the engine or truck and Chief Terry McGrath's mind.
Well, I think for me personally, I don't want an excuses guy. I want a guy that takes charge. And, you know, I don't think anyone in this business expects perfection. We might desire it, but we're realistic. So, you know, I want a guy that's not afraid to take chances. And when I say take chances, I'm not referring at all to aggressiveness on the fire ground or, you know, those sort of tactics. I'm talking about a person that goes out and makes decisions and is comfortable and confident in making those decisions. But I also want that person to be able to own mistakes. I want them to be able to be 100% upfront and honest about what they did and why they did it. And you know what? If things don't go their way, that's okay too. I tell people that it's unrealistic to expect your supervisor not to get pissed. If your supervisor doesn't get pissed, I don't know. I have a hard time trusting people that can't find fault in anything. But at the end of the day, so we just, and I don't even know if you know this, Chief, we just promoted Chris Trail, just promoted to captain. Chris Kirk's, yeah. And so during the interview process, Chris Trail, one of the interview questions had to do with, you know, it was something like your chief for a day, you know, whatever. And anyway, Chris, you know, sat there for a minute and he said, you know, I don't think I could do this, or I don't think it can be done, but I'd like to have a class where you sit everybody down and tell them, quit wearing your feelings on your sleeves. Buck up, camper. So, you know, further on in the interview, he said that sometimes people might be critical of him because he's very outspoken and he's very blunt. And he said, you know, maybe I should work on that. And so, during the interview, I told him, I said, you know what, Chris, that's the last thing you should work on, to be honest with you. I said, honestly, you should teach a class in being blunt. And you know, your buck up camper, that's my go-to phrase for the next 12 months. So, you know, Chris's interview was really refreshing in those regards, because I'm excited about his promotion because I like his personality. And he's a very no-nonsense guy that, you know what, he makes a decision and he'll tell you exactly what he did and why he did it. and he'll have an intelligent conversation with you. And if you disagree with him, he'll go away, but his feelings aren't hurt. When you see him again, everything's good, and you talk about life, and you know, he doesn't hold a grudge, and you know, so those sort of things. So, you know, for me, you know, the phrase of buddy to boss, and we can drum that thing to death, and that's a clever catchphrase and all those sort of things. But there's a lot of truth to that. But when you are the station officer, when you're an assistant chief, when you're a division chief, when you are have the responsibility of supervising people, that is your job. And your job is to supervise people, and it is to make decisions, and it's not to make those decisions based on happy feelings and you know, sunshine. It's to make them practically. It's to make them so that everyone's safe. It's to make them so that you can mitigate problems. It's to make them so that you save money and do things efficiently. That's all part of it. And so I think, in my opinion, that's where we lack a lot, is that people accepting the role of the supervisor. And I'll say this and hush, but I think it's easy to find people that are good at 10% of our job, and that's making decisions on a fire ground. The 90% kicks our ass, and it does. And that's the personnel issues. That's the station life issues. That's the conflict. That's the, hey, you guys knocked that off. That's the, hey, let's get on the rig and go. Hey, we're going to go train, whatever the case may be. And so I think that's where we spend a tremendous amount of emphasis testing people over that 10%. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't, because that's an incredibly risky, dangerous 10%. But we do very little to test them on that 90%. And some places don't do anything to assess that 90%. And I think that's where people get in the biggest amount of trouble.
Well, you're exactly right. And in fact, first of all, that should be a class you should be doing, all right, you know, about the 10%, the 90%. But I do a program, Terry, and you've heard me talk about before, it's based on the email responses I ship out to a lot of folks when they email me or Facebook me or whatever, when they've got the whole, why is this going on? And, you know, I've got a chief that sucks. I've got a captain who sucks. I've got my firefighter sucks. Or my chief, you know, whatever, and on and on. And over the years, I ended up copy and pasting the same thing, and it turned into a program I do that's, you know, which turned into an article that I put out through Fire Engineering, and it's called Firehouse Survival, Us Versus Them. And the article was a Firehouse Survival dealing with him, because, you know, our editors wouldn't let me say us versus them. But anyway, but you hit the nail on the head when you said we hire and we look for that, but we train. We do a really good job, Terry, training people how to survive on a fire ground, right, with maydays and RIT and all that stuff and so on and so forth.
Yep.
You know, and everything. But we do a horrible job training them how to survive in the firehouse, how to deal with them. You know, you know what I'm saying. You and I have talked about who they are, the people that bitch about having to go pick up, you know, someone's grandma off the floor that fell for the fifth time this month. When that's your damn job, that's someone's grandma or someone who, you know, they're, you know what I'm saying? It's people that take this incredible profession, both as a volunteer and career, because we got both listeners out there, and take it for granted, abuse it, think the world owes them something, you know, when they need to realize that it's a privilege and an honor to serve as a firefighter. That you know, to take care of people, to be there for someone, you know, to be your best when someone's at their worst. We do a horrible job training them on how to survive in the firehouse, how to deal with just what Chris Trail said. You know, stop wearing your heart on your shirt sleeve. And you said something great, was, you know, you make decisions and you know, sometimes people aren't happy with them. And it's not about being happy with them. It's about sending people home to their families. It's about keeping people alive and safe. And popular decisions, in a lot of cases, get you hurt and killed. It's a good boss, a good leader that can say, no, this is what we've got to do, and this is why we're doing it, or stop that, or whatever, that'll take care of their firefighters. I think we could get rid of the seatbelt pledge program, Terry, if we had company officers that rode the front seat that said to their driver, don't you move this damn rig until everybody has their seatbelt on. Yeah, we've got to spend thousands of dollars on sensors for seatbelts, red light flashing lights in the cab, and sensors under the seat to tell us that our people are or are not wearing their seatbelts. I don't know how you can go from being America's hero to being a village idiot, you know, from one moment to the next. But and that's just the tip of the iceberg, you know. And I know Chris Trail very well. Chris is outspoken. I will say this, but he's never been insubordinate. You know, there are people out there they don't know how to speak their mind and not be insubordinate. You know what I'm saying? Chris knows how to speak his mind, how to be very blunt, but without being a subordinate. He knows how to deliver his message, and I love what you said, because he is that guy that 20 minutes from there, you turn around, you walk out, and come back in. It's like, how did he throw that switch? Because everything's fine. Because he doesn't, again, stop wearing your heart on your shirt sleeve. This is a time to, you know, time to be an adult. This is the fire service. And, again, you can't go from being America's heroes one minute to coming back in and being the opposite. It just doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. So, well, congratulations to Chris Trail being promoted. That's a good promotion there, buddy. That's a good one. Go ahead, buddy. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. I was going to say, I I've known him a long, long time, and he's a fun guy. He's a great guy around the fire station because he has a very unique personality, and he embraces it like nobody's business. And so it's a lot of fun, and he's going to be a complete joy to watch in this role, because I have all of the utmost confidence and faith that he will do this well.
Well, and as a chief officer, especially. I know what you're saying. To be able to turn around and go, when you look at Chris Trail, you look at people like Gary Apple, one of my favorites, absolute home runs as company officers. It's awesome. You know what I'm saying? It's just awesome. So, hey, you know what? Before we cut you loose, a couple more things tonight, okay? Same thing, I asked you, what do you look for in a good company officer? You guys, you do a lot of hiring there. You've helped a lot of departments with their hiring processes. What do you look for in that new firefighter? You know what I'm saying? You used to do all the background. You were the division chief before we brought you assistant chief. You were the one. You did the backgrounds. You'd come in, you'd sit down with us and go, okay, guys, let me run through this one, that, you know, this is strong, weak. I looked at, all these different things. You firsthand got not just to see what walked in the door, you got to look at their backgrounds. And now you've got Mark Richards doing a great job for you now that you're, with the assistant chief for as many years as you've been assistant chief. What do you look for in that new firefighter?
You know, I think that if I had to put my thumb on one thing in particular that stands out with me and as it applies to our hiring process, and that's effort and attention to detail. And surprisingly, and however anyone wants to tag it, we can talk all day long. Is it millennials? Is it the I generation? I don't know. But, that attention to detail, because when you're filling out a job application, when the job application says list, the last 10 addresses that you've had for or list the addresses you've had over the last 10 years, I can assure you that I don't care where you lived 10 years ago. I do care that you follow the directions and provide that information. Instead of handing that background investigation in and saying, that was a long time ago. I don't even, or you provide me a city and state and that's it. Now, and I've heard it all, I don't know where that is, whatever. And I'm thinking, I don't know. I can pretty much find anything within 5 minutes on a computer. So, but the point is, and all along the process, we ask a lot of very specific information, and there's a lot of those questions and processes in place. We're just trying to figure out if you're going to do it, because ultimately, what I want to hire is someone that puts forth the time, effort, and energy to accomplish the mission. And honestly, what's most important in someone's career? Getting hired. I would think that's the first and foremost most important thing in their life is to get the job. So, that's huge to me. And people that put forth effort and when, if there's an interview and your interview's at 8:30, you're sitting in the lobby at 7:30 or 7:45. and everything that comes out of your mouth is either a yes or no, ma'am, you know, those sort of things, because that is a reflection of who you're going to hire. And so, you know, those are all the things that I've really locked onto when we're doing these processes, because I've come to find that those people that put forth all that effort and energy, if they're willing to do it then, they're probably willing to do it tomorrow or the next day, or, you know, when they're on the truck and answering a call. So those are huge things to me. And you know, along those lines, Chief, the mere fact that I sit here and talk about our hiring process and basically give hints away, and Mark Richards and I have talked about this for a long time, and we both agree wholeheartedly in what we do now. We didn't used to share secrets like that, to say, well, I know the 10-year living thing, it's not really important, it's just a test, we're just trying to figure out. So Mark actually does a presentation now at the junior colleges when he goes to fire academies and tells them how to apply for a job. And it's not the things about, you know, hey, make sure you wear a tie and look in the mirror before you walk in the room and, you know, the sort of things. But he tells them, hey, every single thing that we ask you to do is part of the process. You're being tested every step of the way. You're being evaluated. Now, there was a time where I believed, and a lot of us believe, that we don't share those secrets. But I'm sitting here thinking to myself one day, you know what? What's wrong with walking into a room full of 18-year-old, 19, 20-year-old college kids in fire academy and telling them exactly what we expect of them? And what I want to see at the end is that they adhere to or listen to what you said, because to me, we found the ultimate fireman because it's somebody we can teach, and it's somebody who will follow directions and someone who will. So we don't come into fire academy and look at somebody and say, hey, set the relief valve on that engine. We teach them how to do it. And then they may be the best relief valve setting SOB we've ever seen. But we taught them and we brought them to a level that we made them who we expect them to be. We set the bar, we set the standard, and we're going to bring you up to our standard. We're not bringing our standard to you. And so I think, to me, that's a key thing that at least Mark and I agree on that wholeheartedly, is that we want to identify those people that we can teach something to, that we can give them the examples, and they listen to those examples and apply it in real life, and at the end of the day, they've done exactly what we asked them to do. So that's how we're approaching it now, and, you know, time will tell.
That's absolutely huge, and I love how you said it. You know, that's a reflection of the people. It's Ashley, right? Is one of your last hires, and you know, we got her on the shoulder one day. She was awesome. We've had some of your newest firefighters on there, and that looking for that passion, looking for something that you described. Curtis Burt, the chief in Lake City, Texas, you know, north of you, that was Curtis. Dude, I wish you could have seen Curtis when he was a new firefighter. That was, I mean, that guy, Curtis, was so dialed in. I mean, if you were looking for him, you had to go look on the floor, Terry, because he had his head in the compartment, or he was at the workbench working on the tools or a saw. I mean, you were like, I know where to go find him. You know, that work ethic, that, you know, that kind of person, that the non-complainer, the one that, you know, will step up and take the crappy job when no one else wants to, the person that doesn't do it to apple polish, they just love the job. It's that whole passion thing. How you describe that, you know, and you and I talked about this when I was hiring a trophy club. I had one person call the HR director and say, do I really have to fill this whole packet out? And then they called me and said,
yeah.
Really have to fill this whole packet out? I'm like, yeah, HR told you the same thing. Well, I can't remember a PLP. I went to the paramedic school 12 years ago. I don't remember. I went to paramedic school in 1982, and I can remember people that were in my class. I remember names.
Sure.
I remember funny stories. I remember stuff. Really, you just don't want to fill the shit out. So there you go.
Right.
You know, and like you said before, and Mark, and we've said it for years, God, so how are they going to do an ambulance report? Are they gonna check their air pack like halfway? Are they gonna say, Chief McGrath, you mean you wanted me to search the whole room, not just behind the door? Yeah, we wanted the whole room searched, not just behind the door. That was just an awesome way to describe it, Terry, because you're so right on with that. You know, that I told you before, you and Mark should be teaching a class at FDIC on how to hire the right people. So, hey, you know, last couple things here. You know, we talked on one of our last Hump Day Hangout show about back to the basics again. Had some great guests with us, and we talked about everything from, you know, lack of knowledge of what tools to use and how to use them, a stretched hose, force entry, SCBA, search and rescue, ground ladders, you know, officer training, everything else and so on and so forth. The back to the basics was huge. You know, Louisville has always been known for their logistics in the way of how they fight battles. You bring a lot of people to the fire. And there's a lot of places out there. Just there are some places, Terry, that they just don't have the ability because they don't have the resources around them. But there are the people that have the resources and refuse to call it because whether it's ego or they don't want to look like they were like overdoing it or whatever. But you know, as an incident commander, you guys do a lot of fires in Louisville. Talk to some of our listeners how the importance of that. Thinking big when it comes to the size up, you know, thinking big when it comes to that incident and how thinking big affects the outcome of the incident.
Well, I can speak to this and what my mindset is, and I think what the mindset of our department is, and I'll put the credit back to you because a lot of this was instilled in us when you were there. But, you know, in Louisville, we've got 7 stations, so it's 6 engines. We run a truck company, 5 MICUs. That's basically the lineup. But we can fill out, obviously, a 1 alarm. We can fill out a 2nd alarm probably 3/4 of the way. But at that point, we've got to go mutual aid. And now the mutual aid isn't coming from a long way away, but anyone who's spent time in a communication center knows that it doesn't happen quickly. So, you know, this whole thought of being ready and getting the resources there, you know, it's out of necessity, but at the same time, there's still people that don't subscribe to the thought of doing it. And, you know, and this is something that you really, you know, pounded into our minds for a long time. And, you know, like anything, and I can put myself in that category to look at things and go, well, you know, we've been putting fires out before Chief Lasky got here. We didn't have to call Flower Mound and you know, get mutual aid truck in here, and we could do it. So what I say to that is that, you know, first of all, that's a natural response because it's change, and God forbid we should embrace change. But, you know, number two is that we absolutely did that. We absolutely went in August and fought a fire at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and then we went through our 2 bottles, and then we picked all the hose up, and then we went back to the station and cleaned all the stuff up, and then we had dinner, and then we went out on a you know, a rescue call or something late that night. We're killing ourselves. So, you know, the whole idea of saying that, listen, you know, at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, you guys still got a lot of hours ahead of you. So why are we beating you to death, you know, and putting 4 times the amount of work on you when we really don't need to and we shouldn't. So the whole mindset of think big and prepare for big, and I think that's a huge step in it, and it gets back to that pride thing, Chief, is to say, look, you know, this is planning. We talked about the hurricane at the beginning of this show, and if you went at that hurricane with the mindset, well, this is Houston, it's the 4th largest metropolitan city in the United States, we got, you know, 105 fire stations, and, you know, we're this, we're that, we're, you know, whatever. Guess what? They had to have dudes come in with flat bottom duck boats. So, you know, you've got to think big. And if you're and everything's not a Hurricane Harvey, but it sure can go bad. You know, I mean, even the most routine, mundane things can go bad. And at the point, right, Chief? Because you always say you always got. When you don't have anybody left in staging, then you get a whole bunch of more somebodies there because you're planning for the next alarm. Now, 9 times out of 10, you're not going to that next alarm, but you don't know that. So you're ready and you get the resources coming, and if they get to play, they get to play, and if you got to turn them around, you turn them around. But it's taken a long time for us to you know, adapt to that mindset and get that philosophy. But it's kind of standard practice around here. And and you know, we've come a full circle, I think, because you know now we do a lot of listening to a radio, maybe another department somewhere that you're listening and you're thinking, God, man, call for some resources, call for some resources, call for some resources. So now, you know, we're being critical of maybe another agency that's doing something that we used to do. But it's just, here's the thing, and I guess the easiest way to explain this is that I was a police officer in Louisville and I was a police officer in Dallas. And I remember people used to say to me all the time, they go, oh, man, you worked in Dallas, and that must be really dangerous. And I told them, I said, you know what? I felt 9 times safer in the city of Dallas than I ever did in the city of Louisville. Because in the city of Dallas, if I called for help, I don't know where these police officers are when there's like a minor accident holding. But when you put out an assist officer, there's officers that come out of the gutters. I have no idea where they were. But, you know, within 30 seconds, there's 25 officers there swinging batons, and you know, the cavalry showed up. Well, guess what? In Louisville, you don't have a cavalry. So you have to think differently, and you have to operate differently. You know, like you always say, Chief, what hill you want to die on? You know, there's times in Dallas you make a traffic stop. I wouldn't make that same traffic stop in Louisville because – that's me against a lot of people, and I don't have any help. So, you know, you have to think differently. And every situation, every person listening to the show works in an environment. You know your environment best, but you have to think according to the resources and in the environment that you live in. And in our particular situation, that means you call for help and get them coming quick.
Well, like you said, it's just, you know, just to make it a little bit, throw a little bit more of a personal side of that in there, throw a Mayday in there. You know what I'm saying, Terry? You go through this whole, you know, let's just try to keep it at a one alarm. We don't even have to call any help. And you got one line stretched. You might be just trying to stretch a second line. You got somebody handling the ventilation, whether it's high or low, and you got somebody maybe doing a search. You know what I'm saying? You're early on. Most Maydays happen in the first 24 minutes of an incident. The majority of firefighters get injured and killed. It happens first 24 minutes. And the majority of them, we don't have a whole lot of time. And drop a Mayday in there, and turn around and have nobody there. And that is a god awful. I could tell you firsthand, it is a god awful feeling to not have anybody there when either dispatch screwed up in one particular case or the incident commander was old. You know what I'm saying? It's a horrible feeling. And I'm not trying to sound overly dramatic, but now you've got a Mayday, you've got firefighters who are trapped where, you know, this isn't a burn tower where you have 20 or 40, 45 minutes to mess with this. They're not in there laying next to pallets and straw. You know, they're either out of air, they're on fire, they can't find their partner, there was a collapse or whatever. And to turn around not have enough people there, you know, that just, it's just not good planning. Like we said, like our good friend Tom Freeman, Chief Tom Freeman said, a good officer, you mentioned it, good officer is the one that can predict his or her next alarm. You know, any mope in a white helmet can stand there and burn to the ground when you got in front of you. But a good officer can read the smoke, read the fire, and knows what's coming next. Even if we could always do well with it, Terry. We could always do well with all the help we called.
No, yeah. Tell them thanks and turn them around. Yeah. But you know what? Bring up the point about a Mayday, Chief. There'll be guys that could listen to this from Louisville that don't maybe grasp what I'm trying to say, but if I've got 5 engine companies sitting in front of a house and our truck company, and God forbid a Mayday goes out, I'll be honest with you, that's a tough thing to manage under perfect circumstances. But now you've got brothers in a stressful environment trying to save brothers, and now you're doing it under the worst of circumstances, and you're running short on people, you're running short on resources. You know what I want? I want, you know, a fresh crew. I want someone who's not scrambling like they just came out and took their air pack off, and then they say, oh, crap, there's a Mayday, and now we're scrambling. You know, wouldn't it be so much easier or better for me to be able to grab a fresh truck that hasn't done any battle yet, and a fresh engine that hasn't been involved in the fight yet, and they're thinking clearly, they've been able to lay eyes on a building or a house and assess it, and we're operating in a much more controlled manner by utilizing those resources. And overall, I think it's 10 times safer in that particular situation.
Absolutely. So, well, hey, buddy, you know what? We're closing in on the end tonight here. And I can't thank you enough for filling in for John tonight. Terry, I love doing the Hump Day Hangouts with you. And I've come to depend on you so much for so many different things. You're great at what you do. You're a great boss. You're a great chief officer. You know, I keep begging you to consider fire chief's jobs, and sooner or later I'm gonna get you to bend and take one. But you got some great things going on. I got a great team in Louisville. Any closing thoughts on Hurricane Irma or Harvey in Florida, Texas, and the folks there?
No, you know what? This is like many things. You know, this is a marathon and it's not a sprint. And we do, like in every instance, you know, I think America does a great job in that first 72 hours or 7 days of you know, rallying up supplies and donating money and getting out and donating blood. But, you know, like anything, when the news cycle slows down and moves on to something else, then typically everyone else does too. That's going to take a long time for those communities, both in both states, you know, obviously in Texas and Florida, both. It's overwhelming today. It's overwhelming when the water's still, you know, 3 feet high in your house, but it's going to be equally overwhelming 3 months from now. And it's going to take a long time. You know, the one thing we didn't even touch on, Chief, which, you know, goes without saying, is the number of first responders who personally were impacted by the disaster themselves.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know, they're serving their communities and at the same time praying to God that their significant other is at home and the kids are safe and realizing that their house is destroyed and they've lost their, you know. So it's, like I said, I mean, it's an overwhelming thing. And just remember that, you know, the need for help and support is going to be there a month from now. And, you know, it's kind of one of those things you want to poke your head back in there and go, hey, what can we do for you today? You know, but there's going to be lots to be done and a lot of needs and you know, stay with it.
Well, it's so easy to move on down the road and forget. You know, you're right. Once in a while, you got to, like you say, poke your head back in and say, what do you need now? You know, what else do you need? So, Terry, if they want to get a hold of you, a good email address, buddy.
Yeah, first initial, last name. So it's Terry McGrath, T. McGrath, McGrath, at cityoflewisville.com, and that's LEWISVILLE.
Yeah, I always do that because you still have so many people that try to spell it the other way. But so, all right, so Terry's email there, John Salka. You can get a hold of John. John will be with us for our next show again at Fire Command Training. .com. That's his website, easiest way, firecommandtraining.com. All my information is at prideandownership.com. Okay. Our next show is November 2nd. However, we've got some other stuff coming up before then. John, I'll be back. Hump Day Hangout this next week with Terry, with Chief McGrath, going to have the folks out from Houston talking about what happened there. Terry, thanks again, brother. I can't thank you enough for coming on the show tonight. You're awesome, dude.
No, thank you for the opportunity. I enjoyed it, and I mean, obviously, I would never turn down the opportunity to have a good discussion, and I enjoy it.
Oh, appreciate you, T. Appreciate you. All right, folks. Again, check out our website calendars and Facebook page events for upcoming classes and conferences, or give us a shout if you want to host a class in your area. If you're looking for one of our books or DVDs, you can find those on our websites as well, or shoot us an email. We hope you get to tune in again for our next show. If not, fireengineering.com has all the shows archived. You can go back and pull them all apart. This one will be up probably by tomorrow at the latest. We want to thank one more time our sponsor, Honeywell DuPont, FDIC Scholarship Program, the Honeywell DuPont people. Again, go to FDIC.com. It's there. It's easy. It's over $5,000 worth of stuff. Nominate someone. The process is pretty simple. And it's just an awesome way to get to the best conference in the world. So, hey, we end all of our programs with two very important words, and that's be safe. And we also like you to keep the men and women armed forces in your thoughts and prayers. You know, please, thoughts and prayers for the folks in Florida and in Texas dealing with Irma and Harvey and the after effects. Keep in mind also, never forgetting means never forgetting. So good night all, and God bless.